I'm Michael Hawes. You're listening to Bobcat Logic.
Ich bin Berliner. Part 3, A Tale of Two Kitcheners. 10 December, President Stein replies to the British Commander-in-Chief Lord Kitchener's letter about releasing the women and children, that however glad the burghers would be to have their relatives near them, there is hardly a single house in the Orange Free State that is not burnt or destroyed, and everything in it looted by soldiers. The women and children will be exposed to the weather under the open sky. On account of the above-mentioned reasons, they have to refuse to receive them. He asked Kitchener to make the reasons for their refusal known to the world. 11 December. In his reply to Kitchener's letter about the release of women and children, Chief Commandant De Wet says, quote, I positively refuse to receive the families until such time as the war will be ended, and we shall be able to vindicate our right by presenting our claims for the unlawful removal of and the insults done to our families, as well as indemnification on account of the uncivilized deed committed by England by removal of the families. End quote. 12 December. The report of the Ladies' Commission, the Fawcett Commission, is completed on this day, but it is only published during February 1902. The Commission is highly critical of the camps and their administration, but cannot recommend the immediate closure of the camps. Quote, to turn 100,000 people now being fed in the concentration camps out on the veldt to take care of themselves would be a cruelty. It would be turning them out to starvation. End quote. The commission substantiated the most of Emily Hobhouse's serious charges, but reviled her for her compassion for enemy subjects. 22 December. On Peace Sunday, Dr. Charles Aikid, a Baptist minister in Liverpool, England, protests, quote, Great Britain cannot win the battles without resorting to the last despicable cowardice of the most loathsome cur on earth, the act of striking a brave man's heart through his wife's honor and his child's life. The cowardly war has been conducted by methods of barbarism. The concentration camps have been murder camps. End quote. He is followed home by a large crowd and they smash the windows of his house. 31 December, the camp population in white camps is 89,407, with 2,380 deaths during December. Timeline, 1902. 22 January. In a daring exploit, General Beyers and about 300 men seize the concentration camp at Petersburg and take the camp superintendent and his staff prisoner. After all-night festivities with wives, friends, and family, the superintendent and his staff are released the next day on departure of Beyers. 31 January. The officially reported white camp population is 97,986, and the deaths for January are 1,805. 4th March. The long-delayed report of the Ladies' Commission, the Fawcett Commission, on the concentration camps is discussed in the House of Commons. The Commission concludes that there are three causes for the high death rate. Quote, 1. The unsanitary condition of the country caused by the war. 2. Causes within the control of the inmates. 3. Causes within the control of the administration. End quote. The opposition tables the following motion. Quote, This House deplores the great mortality in the concentration camps formed in the execution of the policy of clearing the country. End quote. In his reply, Chamberlain states that it was the Boers who forced the policy on them, and the camps are actually an effort to minimize the horrors of war. The opposition motion is defeated by 230 votes to 119. 24th March, Mr. H.R. Fox, Secretary of the Aborigines Protection Society, after being made aware by Emily Hobhouse of the fact that the Ladies' Commission, Fawcett Commission, ignored the plight of blacks in concentration camps, writes to Joseph Chamberlain, Colonial Secretary. He requests that such inquiries should be instituted by the British government, quote, as to secure for the natives who are detained no less care and humanity than are now prescribed for the Boer refugees." End quote. On this request, Sir Montague Ameny, the permanent undersecretary at the Colonial Office, is later to record that it seems undesirable, quote, "to trouble Lord Milner merely to satisfy this busybody," end quote. 9th April, Emily Hobhouse's 42nd birthday. 30th April, the officially reported population in the white camps is 112,733, and the death toll for April stands at 298. 15th May, 60 Republican delegates take part in a 3-day conference in Vereeniging debating whether to continue fighting or to end the war. Complicated negotiations continue between Boer delegates among themselves and British delegates, also with different opinions, up to the end of May. During the peace negotiations, Acting President Schalk Burger of the SAR, South African Republic Transvaal, says, quote, "It is my holy duty to stop this struggle now that has become hopeless, and not to allow the innocent, helpless women and children to remain any longer in their misery in the plague-stricken concentration camps," end quote. 31st May, the officially reported camp populations of the white camps is 116,572, and the deaths for May are 196. The final peace conditions comprised in the Treaty of Vereeniging is signed by the representative both the Burghers and the British at 2305 at Melrose House, Pretoria. After this, inhabitants of the concentration camps were gradually released as Burghers came to claim the members of their families still living, while others left on their own to return to their burnt-down houses and farms. 27,927 persons died in the camps. 1,676 men, mainly those too old to be on commando, 4,177 women, and 22,074 children under 16. The role of black people in the South African War. Introduction. The South African War of 1899 to 1902 was essentially a white man's war fought to determine which white authority had real power in South Africa. But other population groups like the Zulu, the Xhosa, the Swazis, and Basotho and Sotos were also involved in the war. Although there was an unwritten agreement between the Boers and the British that blacks would not be armed in the war, neither side adhered to this agreement. It should be mentioned that the South African War was fought in a region where 4/5 of the population was black, and that the conflict was over land that belonged to various African tribes. Mostly politically conscious blacks, coloreds, and Indian groups in South Africa believed that the defeat of the Boers would mean more political, educational, and commercial opportunities would be afforded to them. They hoped that the Cape franchise would be extended through South Africa. The Indian community was encouraged by Mahatma Gandhi to show loyalty to Britain if they wished to achieve their freedom. Thus, the Ambulance Corps was formed in Natal and became active on the British side during the early months of the war. Reasons for not wanting to arm the black population. The British believed that the Boers would be easily defeated and that any military collaboration from groups of blacks would not be decisive in winning the war. In addition, it was commonly believed by both sides that the military methods of the black people were more brutal than those of the white people, and that the white women and children would not be shown mercy by black soldiers. Another reason for not wanting blacks to be given arms was the fear that this would increase the possibility of black resistance to white control in the future. However, as soon as the war started, it was evident that black people played an indispensable part in military operations. On the Boer side, Republican law forbade the carrying of arms by blacks, but because so many Boers were pressed into service, they allowed their servants to carry arms. Black cooperation in the war enabled a larger number of whites to serve actively in war operations on both sides. According to the law of the republics, All males between the ages of 16 and 60 were eligible for war service. And although the law did not refer to race, it was generally applied to the white population only. Provision was made for colors to be called upon, but in most cases this meant an employee going along with his employer. On the Boer side, black people assisted at various levels. Most were assigned to the roles of wagon drivers or servants. Blacks were also used to stand in on farms of Boers who were commandeered to the war. Many were used as ag terriers, who would tend to the chores at the camp or see to the horses. On the battlefield, the ag terrier would carry spare ammunition and spare rifles and even load up the rifles for his master. The Tswana people were conscripted by the Boers to help maintain the siege of Mafeking. Many armed blacks and coloreds also assisted during the siege of Ladysmith. Refusal on the part of the blacks to serve could see them punished with a fine of £5 and imprisoned, or 25 lashes. Although there is no accurate figure, some sources say that at least 10,000 black men accompanied the Boer commandos, and as a rule, labor conscripted by the Boers received no pay. On the British side, it was estimated that about 100,000 blacks were employed by the British Army and more than 10,000 received arms. The British Army used black workers for carrying dispatches and messages, to take care of their horses, and to assist in the veterinary department. They were also used to do sanitary work and construct forts. Armed black sentries guarded blockhouses and were used to raid Boer farms for cattle. In 1900, 7,000 blacks took part in General French's march to Machadodorp in the Transvaal. Over 5,000 others, mostly transport drivers and leaders, were employed by Lord Roberts' columns on his journey to Bloemfontein. The British Army also provided the Kagatla chief and Kagama of the Ngwato with 6,000 and 3,000 rounds of ammunition, respectively, to defend the Bechuana Land Protectorate. In the Transkei, 4,000 Mfengu and Thembu levies were assembled to ward off any attempt at invasion by the Boers or to suppress any Boer uprising. The Boer occupation of Kuruman was initially resisted by a small force of local colored and white policemen. In Mafeking, over 500 blacks took part in the town's defense during the siege, and 200 more enrolled as special constables in Herschel to discourage incursions into the area by Free State commandos. In Natal, the Zulu native police were armed with rifles and a number of them were mounted. However, after the war, blacks who had served as scouts or fighting men were denied campaign medals which they were entitled to. It is apparent that both sides would deny that armed blacks served with them, each accusing the other of doing so. However, in April 1902, after much pressure, Lord Kitchener finally admitted that some 10,053 black men were issued with arms by the British Army. The Boers cited the arming of the blacks on the side of the British as one of the major reasons for discontinuing the war. Reasons for blacks entering the war. Black poverty was a major spur to enlistment in the British Army. For many black families, the war had disastrous consequences as it disrupted the migrant labor system, a development that deprived them of an income used to buy grain and pay taxes and rent. Also, the return of thousands of men to the rural areas increased the pressure on food resources in some already overpopulated districts of Natal, Zululand, and Transkei. In the Transvaal and Orange Free State, Britain's Scorched Earth campaign destroyed the livelihoods of many thousands of blacks. In 1901, separate concentration camps for blacks were established to accommodate those who were uprooted from the land. Most of these were from Boer farms, where they resided as labor tenants, cash tenants, or sharecroppers. Those who entered the camps had very little or no food. Only in exceptional cases were free rations provided. Thus, most black men had no choice but to accept work in the British Army in order to survive. By April 1902, over 13,000 refugees were found to be working in the British Army. As a result, the camps were mainly filled with women, children, the elderly, and the infirm. The British recruited on the basis of a 3-month contract with a monthly wage of 40 to 50 shillings. A major consolation to blacks entering the British Army was the fact that rations were usually included. Concentration camps. Many black people were held in concentration camps around the country. The British created camps for blacks from the start of the war. Entire townships and even mission stations were transferred into concentration camps. The men were forced into labor service, and by the end of the war, there were some 115,000 blacks in 66 camps around the country. Maintenance spent on white camps was a lot higher than that spent on black camps due to the fact that blacks had to build their own huts and even were encouraged to grow their own food. Less than a third of black interns were provided with rations. Black people were practically being starved to death in these camps. Blacks in the concentration camps were not given adequate food and did not have proper medical care, which resulted in many deaths. Those in employment were forced to pay for their food. Water supplies were often contaminated, and the conditions under which they were housed were appalling, resulting in thousands of deaths from dysentery, typhoid, and diarrhea. The death toll at the end of the war in the black concentration camps was recorded at 14,154, but it is believed that the actual number was considerably higher. Most of the fatalities occurred amongst the children. After the war. After the war, the black camps remained under military control even after the white camps had been transferred to civilian control. Black concentration camps during the Anglo-Boer War, 1900 to 1902. While the two main forces in the Anglo-Boer War, 2 were white, it was not an exclusively white war. At least 15,000 blacks were used as combatants by the British, especially as scouts to track down Boer commandos and armed blockhouse guards, but also in non-combatant roles by both British and Boer forces as wagon drivers, etc. They suffered severely as a result of the British scorched earth policy, during which those who lived on white farms were removed to concentration camps, as were the women and children of their white employers. The rural economy was destroyed as crops were ravaged and livestock butchered. Displaced and captured civilians were forced into refugee camps, a total misnomer, because more often they did not seek refuge in the camps, but were rounded up by the British forces and forced into camps, which soon became known as concentration camps. Field Marshal Lord Roberts had an ulterior motive in putting blacks into camps, namely to make them work, either to grow crops for the troops, or to dig trenches, be wagon drivers, or work as miners once the gold mines became partly operational again. They did not receive rations, hardly any medical support or shelter, and were expected to grow their own crops. The able-bodied who could work could exchange labor for food or buy mealy meal at a cheaper price. The British, along racial lines, separated the white and black camps. The inmates of the black camps, situated along railway lines and on the border, became the eyes and ears of the British Army. They formed an early warning system against Boer attacks on the British military's primary logistic artery, the railway lines, and acted as scouts for the British forces. This strategy alienated whites and blacks from each other by furthering distrust between the two population groups and was detrimental to racial harmony in South Africa after the war. Concentration camps for blacks. Transvaal Colony, Balmoral, Belfast, Heidelberg, Irene, Klerksdorp, Krugersdorp, Middelburg, Standerton, Vereeniging, Volksrust, Bantjes, Bezuidenhout Valley, Boksburg, Brakpan, Bronkhorstspruit, Brugspruit, Elandshoek, Elandsdrivier, Frederikstad, Grelingstad, Groot Olifants River, Krokimoor, Klip Riversburg, Klip River, Meyerton, Natalspruit, Nelspruit, Nigel, Olifantsfontein, Paardekop, Plattrand, Rietfontein West, Springs, Vandermeervee Station, Bitkop, Vilge River. Free State, Aleman Siding, American Siding, Boschrand, Ingsgevonden, Geneva, Harris Smith, Heilbronn, Holfontein, Honningsprit, Hutenbeck, Coppies, Ruiwal, Reitsprit, Smaldiel, Serfontein, Tabanachu, Tybosch, Fett River, Virginia, Fentersburg Road, Free the Fort Road, Filgelegen, Vinberg, Volvehoek. Cape Colony in British Bechuanaland, administered by the ORC. Kimberley, Orange River, Tongs, and Dry Hearts. Timeline, 1900. 21 December. The inaugural meeting of the Burger Peace Committee is held in Pretoria. Lord Kitchener discusses his concentration camp policies with this group, mentioning that stock and blacks would also be brought in. 22 January. At the Boschhoek concentration camp for blacks, about 1,700 inmates, mostly Basuto, hold a protest meeting. They state that when they have been brought into the camps, they have been promised that they will be paid for all their stock taken by the British, for all grain destroyed, and that they'll be fed and looked after. They are also unhappy because, quote, they receive no rations while the Boers, who are the cause of the war, are fed in the refugee camps free of charge. They, who are the children of the government, are made to pay, end quote. 23rd January. Two inmates from Henningsprit concentration camp for the blacks, Daniel Marome and G.J. Oliphant, complained to Gould Adams, quote, we have to work hard all day long, but the only food we can get is mealies and mealy meal, and this is not supplied to us for free, but we have to purchase the same with our own money. We humbly request your honor to do something for us, otherwise we will all perish of hunger, for we have no money to keep on buying food. End quote. 30 January. The population of the black camps is 85,114, and 2,312 deaths are recorded for the month. 31 January, the population of the black camps is 75,950, and 1,327 deaths are recorded for the month. 4th of May, the first gold mine on the Rand reopens after all mines have been closed in October 1899, a few days before the war was declared. The Minister for Native Affairs permits Witwatersrand Native Labor Association to recruit mining labor from the concentration camps. Simultaneous to the resumption of economic activity is the establishment of the Department of Native Refugees, or DNR, under direct British military command. 15th June. The British authority establishes the Department of Native Refugees in the Transvaal colony. The Transvaal camps are brought under the control of the newly formed department. 30 June. The official camp population of the black camps is 32,360, and the deaths are not shown in official returns. 31 July. The camp population in black camps is 37,472, and 256 have died in the Free State camps during the month, while in Transvaal deaths are not yet recorded. 31 August. The Free State camps are also brought under the control of the Department of Native Refugees. 31 August. The camp population in black camps is 53,154. And 575 deaths are recorded for August. 30 September. The camp population in black camps is 65,589, and 728 deaths are recorded. 31 December. The population in black camps is 89,407, while the deaths peak during December at 2,831. Timeline. 1902, 18th January. Major de Lorbigny, in charge of the Native Refugee Department, writes that supplying workers to the Army formed the basis on which our system was founded. The department's mobilization of black labor is very successful, not really surprising considering the incentives offered. Those in service and their families can buy mealies at a half pence per pound, while those who do not accept employment have to pay double. By the end of 1901, when the death rate peaks, more than 6,000 accept employment in the British Army. The figure grows to more than 13,000 in April 1902. The laborers are largely housed in black concentration camps situated close to military garrisons and towns, mines, and railway sidings. 31 January, the population of black camps is 97,986, and 2,534 deaths are recorded. 28 February, the population in black camps is 101,344, and 1,466 deaths are recorded. 24th March, Mr. H.R. Fox, Secretary of the Aborigines Protection Society, after being made aware by Emily Hobhouse of the fact that the Ladies' Commission, the Fawcett Commission, ignored the plight of the blacks in the concentration camps, writes to Joseph Chamberlain, Colonial Secretary. He requests that such inquiries should be instituted by the British government, quote, as should secure for the natives who are detained no less care and humanity than are now prescribed for the Boer refugees, end quote. On this request, Sir Montague Ameny, the permanent undersecretary of the Colonial Office, is later to record that it seems undesirable, quote, to trouble Lord Milner merely to satisfy this busybody, end quote. 31st March, the population of the black camps is 101,299, and 972 deaths are recorded. 30th of April, the population of the black camps is 108,386, and 630 deaths are recorded. 31st May, black concentration camp population in the 66 black camps, some sources give the number as 80 camps, reaches 115,700, of which 60,000 are in the Free State camps and 55,969 in the South African Republic Transvaal camps. 523 deaths are recorded for the month. 31st May, the final peace conditions, the Treaty of Vereeniging, is signed by both the Burghers and the British at 2305 at Melrose House, Pretoria. The total black deaths in the camps are officially calculated at a minimum of 14,154, more than 1 in 10, though G. Binnieworth estimates it is at least 20,000 after examining actual graveyards. According to him, incomplete and in many cases non-existent British records and the fact that many civilians died outside the camps caused the final death toll to be higher. The average official death rate caused by the medical neglect, exposure, infectious diseases, and malnutrition inside the camps was 350 per thousand per annum, peaking at 436 per thousand per annum in certain Free State camps. 81% of the fatalities were children. What do we take away from this brief examination? Well, we could turn on our TVs and watch any newscast and pretty much lay out this story on top as a template. Successful strategies are rarely abandoned, and human nature changes at a glacial pace. Both are free to practice evil. Those in the minority who employ the former are hereditary masters of rhetoric, spin, deception, delusion, sleight of hand, and they cover their rottenness with refinement. The majority turn on their own, acquiesce, or deny. Harming women, children, the elderly, sacrificing generations, destroying property, destroying food, persecuting peaceful self-sufficiency, while rewarding dependence and parasitism, can never be made right. It can, however sadly, thrive and endure. For a complete list of sources and references used in this essay, please visit stochasticscintillae.weebly.com/essays.
Come on, Zigzag. Looks like rain.
Street today, the Canadian dream was as far away as it's ever been, as it's ever been. I went out on the street today, the Canadian dream was as far away as it's ever been, as it's ever been. Stay S-O-C-I-A L-I-S-M is a